This is professional radio, gentlemen.
That would and be it's front wheel drive.
Scotty, have you got anyone you want to thank?
Just myself.
And now we do the after hours.
Gentlemen, what would you go for?
Thanks to your sin there.
Okay, and because it's not a supercar.
But it is.
It's not.
Automotive perfection comes in the form of two letters, A and U.
Long live my LTD.
Welcome to Car Talk. It's Tuesday night here on 98.9 Northwest FM. It's me, Matty J, in studio with Mr. Alam Deep Singh. Online with Rob Zadai. Harley's in the background, I think, I believe, too. There he is. Beer in hand and everything. David Prince and Mr. Scotty Doe Johnson. How are you, fellas?
Awesome.
Doing really well, thanks.
Very good to see you all. Obviously, we had the big 500th, which episode is now up online.
I saw that. You've been busy.
I've been. I was busy recording it and laughing and giggling to myself out of all the, how would you explain, the abuse that came my way.
It was a fair amount of abuse.
It was a good time. We had a good laugh, and I had to laugh at all your stories and everything. So it was really quality listening, So, stay tuned for that if you haven't listened to it yet. But let's go around the room first and foremost. How are you guys? We'll start with you, Rob. Rob and Harley, I should say. Car updates with you guys?
Really not much. We just went to Northvale's on Sunday, as Amada mentioned. Saw a real nice car, which is actually for sale on Marketplace there for you there, Matty.
I did see this car. You sent it to me, and I was like, oh, couldn't believe it. So we did mention about this Barra, but it's a W123 turbocharged Barra swapped, and it's engineered as well and everything, which is pretty cool. It wasn't much money. It was like, what, 20 grand?
20 odd grand, yeah. He's asking.
And I was like, that's a lot of car. And it's a coupe too. It's a 123 coupe. So,
oh, wow.
So I was like, oh, that'd be a bit of a sleeper.
Auto. Yeah.
It's all you need. It's just a nice cruiser, and you put your foot down and you beat virtually most things, which would be quite funny.
So yeah, apart from that, looking forward to maybe Motorex this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, so that's on at the showgrounds. What else? We've just been doing a bit of cleaning up down my workshop, trying to get my new car prep bays sorted out so we can start doing the SEC and CE and the old P76. So I've got it all lined up to get it all done. So that's good. That's probably the exciting thing from my end.
So are you going to do the prep, or is the guy going to do it there?
I was going to do all the prep, everything. He's a spray painter, panel beater.
Oh, wow. Perfect.
Yeah. So all the prep's going to happen. So it's finally going to happen.
So you're going to do the P76 last? So you can get it mechanically,
SCC turns out, then I'll get the P76 out, do that. And meanwhile, I'll basically test fit the motor into the CE.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a bit of rust to cut out around the battery, where the battery tray sat within the bay. So I started cutting out all the rust. So I've got to patch that. I'm going to clean up the whole engine bay and repaint the engine bay before I drop in the new engine. So there's a bit on. Yeah. In between that, sort of just trying to get the laser sorted out too, undercoated the radiator panel. Yeah, support panel. So try to get that laser together as well, which is almost there. So that's good.
Yeah, can't wait to see that and put mine to shame in terms of the bodywork. Mine's pretty rough.
Well, yeah. We could do something about that maybe one day.
One day. Once it's got 550,000 K. Once it's got 550,000 Ks on it, and it's quite literally got no paint left, then I'll be like, you know what? Okay, let's do something about that.
Look, if it's still running at 550,000 Ks, you owe it to the car.
I do, yeah. I mean, it's got a fresh engine, so it should be fine. It should be good for the next. Yeah,
I think the real danger is. If Mr. May J has some weird driving adventures.
Yes. I have had a stack in that car before, and it wasn't fun. So let's hope that doesn't happen again. Touch wood.
Touch wood.
And let's let's keep that car getting to... Oh, I want to get it to 500,000 Ks.
It becomes a point of pride once it's passed, you know, that 300, 350 point, especially if it's not like a commercial vehicle. It's just like, how far can I take this?
Yeah.
You know, like just having a odometer that has, you know, that kind of number on it. It's just, again, non-commercial because taxis and stuff and trucks, plenty of them are sitting at, you know, crazy numbers, but something that's just like a personal vehicle, it's like, wow, you know, that's some dedication.
It's impressive. Like I always take the laser anywhere I go, like drive to work every day, et cetera. And Steph's like, why don't you drive the Fiesta? And I'm like, I do, but like, I've kind of like, I've got it in my head now that I want to get 500,000 Ks out of the laser. So I'm driving it everywhere. So it's quite literally 300 Ks away from 330,000 on the dot. So it's not far away. So from 500, it's still a while away from that. But if I get it to 350 by the end of the year, you know, I'll be in good stead because I do about 25,000 Ks in that a year. So would be good to get it there and just keep piling the Ks on.
So is that another 8 years before you reach the 550 mark?
I think it can be done. Yeah. I think it can be done. Yeah. So, but anyway. What else, Rob? What other cars you've been working on?
Well, apart from the CE, you know, the SEC, the Leyland, the 430 and not much. Yeah, you know, just cars.
Just everything at this point.
Yeah.
Is the transit paving?
The transit, basically Motorex. I caught up with the car builders who do all the insulation work, supply all the insulation for the vans. And they're going to be at Motorex, and they've got a 15-20% discount on some of the stuff. So they said, wait until Motorex to buy all your insulation. I'll be buying some more insulation on the weekend and finishing the insulation off probably the following week. So that'll all be done. I've done all the detonator inside, all the panels along the walls and also insulated the roof. Once that's done, basically I want to start framing out the actual foldable beds. They're going to be like Murphy beds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That way I could still get my motorcycle in there and still use the van as a van rather than set it up as a camper. Then you basically limit in what you can use it for.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want it sort of a bit more flexible in what I use it for. So I can put my motorbike in there on the weekend and go for a dirt bike ride or whatever. So that's the plan.
So no more issues with it? It's been good?
Yeah, no more issues with it. It's got 4,500 kilometres on it. Still going all right. I'm driving it as much as I can just to make sure it doesn't do something.
Or any codes or anything?
Got a brand new Mach 1 front end on my Mustang.
I saw that. It looks good.
Yeah, I like it. A lot of people like it. It's sort of slightly understated, but yet it's a little bit different. So I quite like it. Apart from that, not really nothing else. That's it.
Very good. Mr. David Prince.
Don't really know where to start, Matty. There's a few things going on. Been playing with the Accord, the 94 Accord. I've been managed to call in, talking about high mileage cars. That's the 472,000 it's got on at the moment.
Wow.
It's calling in a few. With that sort of mileage, you don't want to go investing a huge amount of money in it because you'll never get it back anyway. So I called in a few favors. I've got the tint all stripped off by one of the tint places I do work for. I picked up a bar cover from a wrecker that I'm in regularly, and they took pity on me, gave me a new bar cover. So I've got a panel shop painting that for me. Gave the interior once over with a product I've known about for years, and it's a bit old school. People don't use it much. It's called Prestige Leather Cream. Comes in about 20 colours, I suppose. Right. So I actually used a couple of bottles of that and mixed up the colour. It's got sort of a mid-grey leather, being a bit EIS, and just nothing particularly bad, just a little age-related marks and scuffs and stuff. So I'll give it two or three applications, but I tell you, after the first application, it's just wipes on and wipes off once it's sort of matted off, dried off a bit. It came up a treat. It just the leather is going to be lovely in it, which is pretty good for a 30-year-old car. So, yeah, that's coming along. Next steps to get a couple of mechanical – I was talking to Matty today, and I might actually take it out to our friend at Dandenong Harcon.
Our boy Reed.
Reedy, and get him to just have a look and tell me where to start. It, it, you can, it feels its case in the way it drives and rides and a few squeaky bushes and stuff, but I'm happy to do the stuff that's going to make a difference that I have to do sort of thing. But we won't go nuts, but a lot of that stuff will be available in our favorite American supplier, Rock Auto, who are shipped to Melbourne and or shipped to Australia, and they're really reasonable prices. So, yeah, I just need a list of stuff that I need before I can sort of get that in, but they ship really quickly to Melbourne, and yeah, I'll have the stuff within a week. So, that'll be worth doing. So that's moving along slowly.
We've got to get that one to 500. Like, that's not far off.
It's not far. No, that's right. In fact, I had a couple of people who do in the club do big mileages every year, and he said, "Oh, I'll take it for a month or so. I'll make a dent in it." So that may well happen.
Just make sure not with the good bar on yet. Okay, it's just...
yeah, that's right. Yeah, we don't want stone chips in the new bar quite so quickly.
Quite yet. So yeah, give it to some person.
Asking around, there's a lot of cars in the club, and Matty, you've got two over 300,000.
I do, yeah.
There's over 300. But there's quite a few Hondas in the club over 400,000. Mm. So it's not that unusual. And most cars, if they're looked after properly, will last, you know. But the beauty of a Japanese car particularly is that it will go do those distances with less work than a lot of other brands, I suppose, or other cars from different countries.
I mean, look, all cars are... you know, 250, 300 will do bushes. Like it doesn't matter what brand it is, but it's if you stay on top of it and maintain it, the cars don't degrade, you know what I mean? Like they'll just keep feeling tight and keep going. So a lot of people don't realize that, but we'll cover that in a little bit.
Because the biggest killer for a lot of cars in a lot of climates is just rust.
Mm.
And we realistically don't have that in Australia. So yeah, that's one of the biggest benefits we've got. We do have a harsh sun.
We do.
Which is usually the bane of paint jobs. But
every Mitsubishi Magna ever.
But Clio doesn't make the wheels go around, thankfully. Exactly. So all the suspension mounts hold up or anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
correct.
So the only other thing going on in the background, and I had great intentions of taking everyone along the journey of importing another K car from Japan. In the last 10 days now, I suppose, that's all gone a little bit pear-shaped. In that the Department of Infrastructure have actually halted compliance on a range of K cars, in processing vehicle import approvals. So there's some dispute over a new regulation that was brought in around side impact, and they've halted the approvals until they get to the bottom of which cars qualify and which cars don't. So some cars are affected, are definitely affected, and they're determining whether or not they're going to allow them into the country. Some are dependent upon build date, and some are not affected. And interestingly, the ones that aren't affected are the K trucks. So if I was going to be involved in an accident in a small Japanese car, a K truck is probably the least likely one I'd want to be in. But as I was talking to Ed briefly before, he rang me. He's had an update from the organisation he works for. Does one of their sister companies does import K cars from Japan, and they've put a hold on all importation and selling of any K cars at the moment until we get resolution.
Is the K truck, I guess, loophole a situation where, because you can class it as a commercial,
correct,
get away with, yeah.
Well, that's all we can imagine. I mean, it makes no other logical sense, any other way. When I brought the first N1 in, obviously one thing I knew that a lot of grey imports needed to have engineered into them were side intrusion bars.
Mm.
But the N1 didn't need them because it had 6 airbags. And that was a thing at the time. They said, oh, no, that if it's got airbags, then you don't need intrusion bars, because that's a newer technology. So at the moment, my car is paid for and sitting on a dock in Nagoya, waiting for import approval before I can go on a boat. I'm not putting it on a boat until I have import approval, as if I've got any say in all those sorts of things, which I don't. So, I mean, on one level, there's absolutely nothing I can do about it until it to me, it sort of reeks of a bureaucrat somewhere trying to make a name for himself doing something, or, you know,
justify their job.
A tweetable tweet that you can say, look what I'm doing in protecting the lives of, you know, hundreds of thousands of Australian people. We're not really. I mean, you've just got to look at them. If I didn't want to drive a K car, I'd go and buy a Volvo or an old BMW or a Saab or something, you know. And obviously there's a basic law of physics at play, and that if you get hit by something much bigger, then you're going to come off second best. But I don't want to be told that I can't have one. I mean, where do motorbikes fit in with that, Rob?
Exactly. If you're allowing motorbikes on the road and they can just basically be turned into, you know, tomato paste.
Or over the top of cars. You can't always stop.
It's not the crash that hurts. It's the stopping after the crash, isn't it? That's the part that does the damage. So
the fact that they're totally happy with cars getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. That's
is such a pedestrian, you know, hazard now.
100%.
And they're like, that's fine, but it's like, God forbid you drive a small economical car.
Yeah.
Exactly right. It's 1,000 times more environmentally friendly and cheaper to run and all those things, easier on the roads. How about banning Rams and GMCs and F-150s? How about we do that before we ban K cars?
Yeah, the rule of mass comes into play there as well. Like, you know, like...
100%.
Even if you're in like a, you know, a Raptor, okay, like a Ranger Raptor, you get hit by a Ram, like a full massive Ram, like a Dually, it's still wiping you out. Like there's always a bigger fish. But for me, this is a bit insane, because I just feel like someone's trying to justify their job.
Yeah.
Didn't Daihatsu get caught out big time with their safety or lack of safety?
You're right, Robin. I don't know if they've freaked out and said, "Oh, if Daihatsu's cars aren't safe, you know, maybe let's look into these small cars that we're bringing in." And that could have been the trigger. That could have been a reason. But see, they're like, the fact is that there is already, you know, N1 RSs and stuff on the road here in Australia. If it's already been done, and what are you going to do? Hey, sorry guys, you've got one of those in Australia. I'm going to have to take it off you. Thank you very much.
It appears everything is on the table, Maddie. And the email that Ed read out to me before from the parent company was that there has been discussion around decomplying cars.
Get out. Are you kidding? Complied.
Yeah. So, you know, that's an interesting concept in itself. Somebody's got to pay. So I'm dealing with Ben Lipper at JSpec Imports, who's a bona fide legend, lovely bloke, and doing absolutely everything by the book. Mm-hmm. And he's nominated top secret in Sydney to do the compliance on my car. So Ben said, you have done nothing wrong and I've done nothing wrong. We've acted completely within the regulations with what we've done so far. Mm-hmm. So now they've moved the goalposts. So he said the one consolation for you is that if this goes completely pear-shaped, your car is still in Japan. And he said there are lots of cars on the water. And he said there are cars in Australia waiting for compliance, which if they won't comply... the email actually says it will be destroyed. Right. So,
couldn't you technically get around it by saying that car's not imported for road or ADR purpose, but imported for nugget racing or track?
100%. And before it was destroyed, you'd certainly think, okay, well, we should start a K-class of race cars. You know, yeah. I'd talk to Ying from Nugget Nationals can we just amend that entry-level point of, you know, $5,000 and just up a little bit and go from there sort of thing? But, yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, to destroy someone's car, it's like the Hoon legislation, isn't it? Mm. Like, that's what it reeks of. And I frankly completely object to that, you know, like that there's that discussion around what they're planning on doing, if that's what's happening. But the Importers Association were having a meeting with the Department of Infrastructure Monday week ago and Friday week ago. But as yet, nothing's come out. So all we can do at this stage is watch this space, I suppose. Top Secret in Sydney, who I spoke to the other day, they said they have 200. That's one compliance workshop has 250 people at the moment that are affected by it. So
what makes that rule any different for them saying, any cars made in the 1990s with no airbags, no side intrusion, no nothing, no ABS, no stability control, no nothing – look, we're going to decompliance your car because we think they're just not safe. What's going to stop them from doing that?
Well, that's where you would hope common sense would prevail, and they can't do that because, I mean,
that's insane.
Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to compensate people when they change the rules like that midstream? I mean, that's surely can't be an option. If they put an arbitrary date of October 2021 as being the point at which some cars are allowed in or not allowed in, and the N1 is on that list. My car's a 2020 build, so theoretically it's before that cutoff. So all I can think is that October 2021 date was when some new safety regulation came in regarding intrusion or something like that, and there is a concern over whether the cars built after that date would actually comply with these regulations. But yeah, as I said, watch this space. I'll keep you posted.
It's interesting too, though, because insurance will come into this as well. Like, you know, the speaking about mass coming off second best, you know, like my brother's 80 series he had, remember he got a quote for his insurance, and it was almost double what his Falcon was. And he's like, why is it so expensive? And they're like, oh, it's not because of what or because of how old or anything it is. It's because of what your car can do to other cars in terms of size and he was just blown away by how that he's like, but it's an old 80 series worth about $8,000. Like, it's not worth nothing, and you want to charge me $2,500 a year to insure it. They're like, that's just so
do you get third party cover and then ram it into like the most expensive car you can?
I mean, that's the way to do it, isn't it? Really,
that'll teach them.
That'll learn you. If that's happening with that, then your K car comes in and be like, oh, look, sorry, we're not going to insure that because it's not really going to comply. But having said that though, like, can you, seeing as you physically own the car, paid for, can you still bring that in a year's time, let's just say, like hypothetically, as a personal import, because you've had it for a year?
If I moved to Japan and lived there for a year.
Okay, so that we can't get
right. Actually, I don't see a negative in that. I'm just saying.
Oh yeah,
it's a possibility, you know.
Because I don't think
I could be a Japan correspondent for Car Talk. That'd be brilliant.
That would be awesome. well, David, if my plan, I was speaking to the guy today about teaching in Japan next year. I might need a car to drive around in. I can put it in my name and drive it for a year.
How many cars can you do that to, like, at the same time?
Oh, well, I'd buy everything.
Yeah, like buy five cars. Like, this is my fleet in Japan.
One.
I'd imagine it'd be one. It's one per person.
That would be so cool, Maddie. And at the same time, it would be the most horrifyingly difficult experience. I think you're driving my K car all around Japan, and yeah,
I'd feel super excited, but also super nervous. I'm like, wait, anything happens, David Prince is going to kill me. but look, you know, there's a chance, David. There's a chance.
Okay. Watch this space.
But yeah, dude, I honestly can't believe that. Like, I think that's an utter shambles. You know, the people are just trying to justify their jobs. It's ridiculous. It's just like saying you can't put a car on, you know, that's older than 25 years on a club plate anymore because, you know, we feel like cars that should be on club plates should be historically over 50. You know, like moving the goalposts from here to here to make it difficult for other people when they've done nothing wrong and it's within the law, and then they're just like, hang on a minute, now we're changing this. And yeah, for me, that just sounds like people justifying their jobs. But anyway.
Oh, Department of Infrastructure, if you're listening, we do love you guys. We know it's not you, it's us, but please let us have our import approved for our cars.
Wait, well, if you do,
let's not bag them out too much. They might be monitoring this podcast.
Well, if you guys do, please be kind to one David Prince and bring his specific N1 RS.
I mean, just look at it; it's the cutest thing. You've got to let it in.
it's the mini R, as we called it, David. So just let that one in. But anyway. Scotty Doe, updates with you, man.
Nothing too awesome or exciting. Just I'll be going to the picnic on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make sure the car is all nice and clean and spiffy, ready for it.
So what car are you bringing, Scotty?
The Blade will be coming along to that one.
The 31 doesn't have a transmission that works. So the
31 is still, yep, But it's all sitting there ready for a manual spot. But, you know, just have to get around to that one now, I guess.
We've got a working
bench. And then it can be on the road. But, yeah, get around to that. Yeah, have a huge working bee. Come around. Everybody help. Get it back on the road.
Awesome. That'd be
cool. That's pretty much about it. I don't have any other cool news.
Alam Deep Singh.
I don't think I have any cool news.
Okay.
The car's just running. That's it.
All of them are good?
Yep.
Anyone wants to buy the MX-5? I don't have the glove box of the MX-5 yet.
I do. I apologize for that, David. I'll send that to you tonight, hopefully, or tomorrow morning. But if somebody does want to buy it off me, please let me know.
What's your at?
Just hit us up at Car Talk.
Yeah, 100%. We'll sort you out.
Because Alan wants either a Spec C or a 20th entry.
Oh, two good choices. I like those. Car updates with me. Took the Fiesta for I put about 450k on the Fiesta on the weekend, which was a lot of fun. So it's finally hit 7,000 k's after a long time.
Halfway to the STI.
Halfway to the STI. Well, and Steph was like to me. She's like, Matt, I technically drive this more than you, and she does. So I thought that was quite funny. But anyway, so yeah, hit 7,000 k's. So that's going in next month. I've got to book the service in for that. I haven't done that yet. Yeah, that's pretty much it on my end. I'm gonna bring out the MR2, probably pick it up tomorrow or the day after, and get it ready for Sakura Picnic, which is Sunday. And yeah, that's pretty much it on my end. But look, Jim, I wanted to talk to you guys about a few things. We mentioned some high milers earlier. Obviously, Mr. David Prince has got a cord with 472,000 k's. My laser 350. Sorry, not 350, 330, but we'll want to get it to 350 by the end of the year. And my MR2 had 330,000 k's on that as well. So the high milers can still get around if they've been maintained, right? Like that just happens. My question to you is, if you were after a car, like a cheap car, and you didn't care about K's because, you know, you're looking out for a high miler that you'd be comfortable buying, what would you be comfortable saying? Yeah, you know, that'll be fine. I'll just buy one of those. And my instant logic goes to Camry. because they are the car equivalent of a cockroach, where they're quite hard to kill. But it's something, I mean, we're all esteemed gentlemen, I believe. And we're men of taste.
Sorry, Manny, on the top of Camry, you guys mentioned some kind of dent in the right-hand side of the rear bumper.
It's
a Camry thing, apparently.
It's a Camry thing, yeah. There's pages on it on Facebook.
Really? Because, well, again, I was not aware of it. But now I'm thinking of my dad's 1990 blue Camry. Yep, it had one. I remember you guys talking about it. I think it was at the 500th episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, in the rear and the right? I'm like, wait a minute. Well, we had that.
It's the Camry.
It rings true, you know? It very much rings true.
It's the Camry dent. It's the corner dent. It's it's the dent that makes all dents look inferior. It's the Camry dent. The Camry parking dent, that is. So I'll leave it in your capable hands. What cars would you say? Yeah, if you look, I wouldn't care if the car had 400,000 k's on it. It'd sort of be okay. I'll leave it in your capable hands, gentlemen.
I feel there is a little caveat to that it is very car dependent.
Mm.
Like I bought my Rexy at 212,000 k's.
Mm.
And that's probably the upper limit of where I'd probably buy one, just because I know that past there, you know, things can get a bit iffy. Get iffy a lot earlier on.
Well, apparently you can't leave the driveway without your head gasket blowing up.
Yeah, apparently. But, so, you know, I messaged my brother-in-law, who still has it. It's at over 300,000 k's. I think it's somewhere near 315, maybe 320. Still going strong. Obviously, it needs repairs, but all cars do.
Yeah.
So something like that, I'd say it's probably closer to that 200,000 mark. But something like a Falcon, if it was a situation of I need a reliable car and price is the biggest, you know, motivating factor,
mm-hmm.
I would buy an X-Taxi with like 700,000. Because
yeah.
I know I'll probably have to do some bushings, windscreen, you know,
a rear main.
Like yeah, a rear main, that's, yeah.
Whatever.
Just but you know, just let it leak.
Yeah.
This video is an automatic, just let it leak. Just let it leak. Yeah. But that's probably it, and you'll still be going for the next 300,000 Ks or something.
Yeah, but like, provided you put in like some you know, super pro poly bushings with a lifetime warranty, you know, and you're happy with that, and you know, you do your ball joints because Falcon life, and then you know, mechanically they're fine.
Yeah, like you just the donut in the middle of the drive shaft will go, but that goes every, you know, 100,000 or so.
200,000
or yeah, so it'll be like the fifth time it's been replaced. But like something like a Falcon, if again, price was like the biggest motivator and I could get it for a very good price with high Ks, no questions asked, I'd grab Falcon.
Dude, I remember seeing this FG G6, not an E or anything, just the G6 X-Taxi, 850,000 Ks on it. And the guy wanted $2,000.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Engine-wise, it'd be okay, but suspension would be totally shagged. Yeah. But you know what? It's a Falcon. They're cheap to fix. So, yeah, that I mean, and it like they do Ks, so and they do Ks very well. So, yeah, I think that'd be, I think that's a good pick.
Actually, Orangutaxi. I was just going to say Orangutaxi a couple of weeks ago, and an FG arrived at FG XR6, which I thought was pretty old for a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
When were they? What that would have been 20.
FGs started in 08.
Oh, okay. That's pretty old for a taxi. I don't know how it managed to be a taxi, but it was a 1.3 cab. I said, wow, yeah, this is an old Falcon for a taxi. He said, oh, yeah, it's a good car, though. He'd done the diff.
Yeah.
And the transmission. I thought, well, that sounded familiar. But, yeah, that was on 580 or 590, I think. And, yeah, performed great. You know, I mean, the diff was nice and quiet.
Yeah, was it a whiny diff? So and he was happy driving it. He was like, yeah, it's
fine. Yeah. No, he was happy with that.
Yeah, like I've spoken to a lot of cabbies. Like my uncle was a cabbie for, you know, 20+ years, and he always ran Falcons, and he's like, you know, if you can get away with a noisy diff, you know, mechanically they're pretty good. You know, not much can eat, you know, taxi fuel as in gas. Do everything comfortably, and you know, hop out of your shift fresh, and then you know, go to ready for another go, like a Falcon. So, and it showed that, you know, they owned the taxi game for like forever, really, until kind of they stopped making them. So yeah, it's quite interesting to see that. And you drove one again, David, recently with like. What the one that it has 450,000?
Yeah, 440 or something, and one was 440, and one was 380, I think.
And they drove fine.
Eco gas ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I did a regi check on Dazzle Falcon.
Yep.
Which Ed moved along at the auction. It's still registered.
Still registered.
Yeah, still going.
There you go. Hashtag gassy.
Yeah. Well, at 220 a litre for regular petrol, you know, gas at 90 cents dollar seems pretty economical.
Dude, I didn't fill up to my car today. I was like, I refused to do it because it was like $2.50 for 98,
yeah.
And I was like, I'm putting $10 in it, and that'll get me to work and back. And then I'm like, and then I was like, that is a disgrace. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. But anyway, Rob, what car would you buy if you had to buy something with high miles that you just get the job done?
I keep on knocking my mate. With his car, he's got a Ford Courier, a diesel.
Oh, yeah.
It's got 200 and, I reckon, say, at least 70,000 kilometres on it. It's been stolen once, thrashed. And it's still going. You did have to put another turbo on it after it got stolen. But apart from that, it runs well, starts well, goes well.
Courier was the Mazda-based one, wasn't it?
Mazda-based one.
Yeah.
And wow. I'm just looking at some of the cars here on Marketplace, 370,000 kilometres on them, 297,000.
What about the car you worked on the weekend, 338,000 Ks, Toyota Echo?
Oh, yeah. My dad's car's got he's got a Toyota Echo, and that's got 30-odd thousand kilometres on it.
Wow.
You
got it for free.
Yeah, all the rubber bushes are pretty much shot on them.
Yeah, I'm assuming they wouldn't be at those cases.
But I did the brakes on them, and something real funny happened to the brakes. The right hand side brake caliper was pushing one of the pads on an angle, and it actually chamfered the whole brake pad on a like a 25 degree angle, wore it right out. That's and what I found out is no shim on the actual caliper aligning the actual pad. So the shim was a little, you know, spring steel shims that hold them in place. So looks like that's what caused the issue with the brakes. But apart from that, the car just starts, goes, just keeps on going. Trouble free.
So it's Toyota.
I think Toyota have done a brilliant job too with the ad that they have. With the highlight of the ad is the mileage just clicking over. There's a great old cruiser and the old cocky driving it, you know, just nods knowingly, you know, as it turns over, I think 800,000 or 800,000 Ks or something.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, you know, that a manufacturer trying to sell new cars is actually pushing that aspect of the longevity of and reliability of their brand. I mean, it's a perfect thing to hang your hat on as far as getting people to buy the car, but there's going to be a lot less people buying new cars if they're staying in these cars with these huge mileages.
It's an interesting kind of marketing strategy, but like I think it'll be effective because it'll be Toyota's. You think Toyota, you think reliability, right? Yeah. Like that's. I think that with a few different brands, but like the one, as soon as you say reliability, you straight away think Toyota. The first brand. It is genuinely the first brand you think of. Like,
and it's hard to beat the idea that a person is moving to a new car not because they have had to, because their cars, you know, died on them, but it's because they want to. They just want a new experience. They want a new car, and that old car will still go to someone and still continue running. So. I think that's probably a great marketing strategy overall.
I remember seeing this. It was the Batuta Advocate. They had Toyota recalling 1992 Toyota Camrys, not for anything wrong, but because the driver should have bought something new by now. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right, doesn't it? Really? So, and it's a good thing. Like it's especially in a country where. You know, and look, the predominant amount of cars sold here are Toyotas, specifically Toyotas in the bush and in this, you know, desert remote areas. Why? Because a Toyota will get you home. You know, and they hang their, you know, their whole marketing strategy on that, you know. Why would you buy a Ranger when you could buy a Hilux? Why would you buy a, you know, an Everest when you can buy a Land Cruiser? Land Cruiser, you know, the proven, you know, it'll get you home, you know. So that they will, you know, they will that you know, they will do that. Every time someone asks me, oh, you know, what's a good reliable first car? I always say, oh, like a Corolla or an Echo, or you know, if you want something that's cheap and reliable, or, you know, Yaris. And they're proven. Like, you know, they will do Ks. Like, yeah. they do Ks.
Our friend Julian, he's expecting a baby, and they've already got themselves a Honda CR-V, which is their main kind of family car. But he said, "I want a sedan. I want something safe and reliable." I said,
"Camry,
the new Camry." Yeah, I'm like, the new Camry's got a bit of a facelift, and it's going to be great on fuel and safe, and you know, it's got all the features that you would want in an average car. Like, it's hard to beat.
Yeah.
Because he was looking at, I think, Mazda 6s, and those are lovely sedans, but they're very pricey.
Mm.
So I'm like, you know, for two thirds of the cost of what you get the top spec. Mazda 6-4, you can get the Camry and you're still laughing.
And you get everything.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like, the new Camry is a good looking car.
Yeah, pretty good looking.
And from all accounts, they've actually improved the way they drive. And I mean, my mum's got a Camry, you know, and she's got a Camry for a good reason. Like, it's just, you know, you turn the key, it works. You get to where you're going. You know, there is a good reason why Camrys are a good thing and considered that way. But I do find it, you know, interesting that Toyota is doing that. They're like, oh, well, you know, we make reliable cars, so you can keep buying our cars when yours breaks. But again, you know, if people want a reliable car, they will buy a Toyota. And I think that's, you know, I think that's a given. What about you, Harley? Any high miles that you would say, yeah, you know what, I'd buy one of those. It'd last.
Well, some old Mercs I would buy. Like even our E-class, like some of the E-classes, you know, not like high mileage, but like I've seen some of them at 400,000 Ks. And when you see them at the auction and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, but funny, this is like funny like story. My friend had a Volkswagen Touareg.
Mm-hmm.
It almost had 500,000 Ks on it.
That would have been expensive 500,000 kilometers.
Yeah. Like, he's paid for the car three times over.
It never had anything wrong with it.
V6
petrol.
Petrol.
It was like normally with petrol, mainly with diesel. This is a petrol V6.
Well, he chose the right because they got the VR6 engine, right? So that any everybody that knows them says if you're gonna buy one, make sure you buy that one. Yeah.
And they bought the car with about 220,000 Ks on it in maybe 2010 or something. Yep. And they just sold recently, but they had almost 500,000 Ks on it.
Wow.
And still going, yeah.
That's the holy grail Touareg, really, isn't it? Like that is the only one that'd still be going at that.
What about the V10?
Well, the
I still think it's extremely dumb. A V10 turbo diesel, but yeah.
That was the R50, wasn't it? They had an R50. Yeah. They had an R50 version, which was like a ridiculously powerful V10 diesel thing. I know a guy that's got one, and he was so happy when he bought it. And I'm like, and he took it to Alice Springs. I'm like, good luck, bro. Like, I don't think you're coming home.
This guy sold one for $15,000, and he mentions Top Gear TV do show did a segment on one Tonga huge jet 747.
They did.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, look, I understand it's a cool thing, but I probably wouldn't be selling a secondhand car with that kind of.
Imagine how the DSG would have been after that.
Well, apparently when they did it, they weren't allowed to put the brakes on because it just would have destroyed the whole braking system. They had to let the car just come to a stop naturally because it just would have just cooked the whole car.
I thought you were going to say that the car stopped and the 747 would have rolled over the top of it.
Over the top of it. That is true. That is true. And that could have happened as well. Scotty.
I don't want to jump back to Toyota again, but I'd probably say Lexus.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be happy to buy a Lexus with high Ks, even if you've seen on YouTube with the high mileage ISF.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. What did they get up to?
Pretty interesting. It was in miles. It was like over 100,000 miles.
Dude, there's one that's done 800,000 kilometers. And it's fine, like totally fine. Good compression. And this guy tracks it every weekend. It's nuts.
Yeah, they just thrash it and use it as a daily and everything. And there's been no dramas with them. Other than your normal things, which is just replacing bushes and stuff. I think people tend to forget that part.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how great a car is. It's still normal maintenance, wear and tear, everything. There's always wear and tear.
Absolutely.
So I was thinking Lexus for sure.
Like an LS400 as well. A lot of them keep going strong.
Yeah, LS400, 100%.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're absolute tanks.
Yeah.
I think it's, if you got the one UZ in it.
Oh,
started off with rich businessmen and drug dealers and stuff, and slowly trickle down their way to young fellas, who are trying to look cool, and some old people as well driving them around.
100%.
I've just searched Lexus by highest Ks, and the highest couple of 470s, the Land Cruiser version of the early cars, 2000s. But there's a number of LSs in there, 425,
402. So LS400 is at 475.
David and Rob, for that matter, you guys were specifically around when the LS400 first came out. Was that just like a complete spaceship? Like, was that just like the best car you've ever seen in terms of like fit and finish and quality?
They certainly, I think within the trade, they certainly shook things up. They were so well built and such a quality, substantial feeling car. There was a lot of, but it's just a glorified Toyota, really. Well, yeah, that's not actually a bad thing, if you've got Toyota reliability in a car that quality, and just the way it was built and the way the doors shut and the quality of the interior fitment and stuff, they really rocked the motoring world, I think. And it's not like they haven't been successful, really, is it?
No, yeah, they're still around. But you, so David, getting to you now, what would you say?
I was in a taxi in Singapore last year that had done 1.3 million Ks, and it actually had the extra digit. So it was actually reading.
Wow.
I was sitting in the passenger seat looking across at the instruments, and it was night, at night, and so all the instruments were lit up, and I was looking at this row of numbers in the speedo, and it didn't make automatically connect that it was the odometer. And I finally said to the guy, is this car done over 1 million kilometres? He said, yep, 1.348 million kilometres, yeah, whatever it was. Still ran perfectly fine, rode perfectly fine. And let's not forget, Singapore's an island. You know, it's that's a lot of driving around in circles, really.
I was going to ask that, like, did the owner purchase the car new in Singapore, or did it come from somewhere else?
Yep. No, it was a Singapore delivered car. It was about 8 years, they can keep taxis up to 8 years old. And it was almost ready to be retired. So it was I don't do codes too well. It was a diesel 240D, it was an E-Class, that's for sure. But yeah, pulled up, I thought, oh, this is an old, gloppy old Benz, you know. And then I saw 1.3, I thought, okay. Respect,
fair,
you know.
Fair.
I want to know how many loops of the island that makes.
Well, the thing must have just literally been going the whole time, you know, to cover that sort of mileage in that time. But look, I as much as I love my Hondas, I think you're hard pressed with Toyotas. I mean, I think Toyotas will do just so many Ks if they're looked after properly. Mm. But I think the everything's all there. I mean, we had it rammed home again in Japan, didn't we? All those Crown Comfort taxis.
Oh, my goodness.
With grey Ks on them. I think one we were in, the five of us with it, including the driver, the rear shockers had literally gone out to lunch in that.
It was pretty done, that car, wasn't it?
Yeah, that one.
It was pretty stuffed.
But most of them were pretty good. But I love the durability of them as well, like the materials in the interior and the vinyls and the fabrics and that. You know, they show next to nowhere at all. So when you think that the parts you see are that good, in a lot of cars they're not that good already, and then you think, oh, what's the rest of the stuff that you can't see like? I think you're hard pressed to. I think they win tonight.
Yeah, like I remember saying, like, and I think even Thomas said it, like the interiors felt like 80s. Sorry. 80 series Land Cruiser, like, you know, plastic, and which is you know, plasticky but hard wearing and really good quality. So like they didn't feel like that was stuff. Like, they felt quite good.
Yeah.
I mean that big massive K one, that the one we coming back from Legoland, like the rear end felt like it was not connected to the front at all. But the, you know, it still drove, and, you know, it still felt.
The drivetrain was completely smooth, like all of them.
Yeah.
Gear changes, you just didn't feel the gear changes. You just heard the revs.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a silky straight six. I couldn't agree more. I thought they were a really, really good thing. Really enjoyed, enjoyed going in those and asking that one question and getting their reaction of just looking at me like, is this guy for real? And I ask how many cases this car had done. But yeah, so I think Toyota is currently winning. But if we didn't have to pick a Toyota, obviously, like, we're looking for other options. So you said Falcon. Rob, would you be in that boat as well? Or
yeah, I'm just looking at a G6e on car sales now, and it's, you know, $12,000, and it's got 700,000 kilometers on it.
Whoa.
Ooh. Yep.
I think we should provide a caveat too to our international listeners that we are in Australia here. So I think probably some of the old BMs and some of the old Mercedes in Europe, I think where they don't have the
salt in the
luxury car. Well, I was going to say they don't have the luxury car association with prices and maintenance and that sort of thing out here. I think over there it's far more, you know, what everyone drives sort of thing. And you see some pretty incredible mileages over there. In fact, and in the USA, of course, and there's a Volvo P1800 still holds the record for the highest mileage car in the Guinness Book of Records.
I would agree with you. Like, I know what Alan's about to say right now. My 1W124 I had, which everybody seems to know, that had done well over 500,000 Ks.
The free car they kept on taking.
Like, and to be fair, look, it was tired, but even when Ed drove it, he's like this kind of drives like they all drive. Like it felt, it still felt good to drive. Like it didn't feel tired. Engine wise was a bit underpowered because it was just like, ugh, I'm kind of over life. But you know, that had done over 500,000 Ks and it was still going. Yeah. So, albeit, you know, emptying my pockets, but still going. And, So my uncle has it and he absolutely loves it. And he hasn't had to spend a dime on it. So I'm like,
Matt spent all the money once Carl's ready to go. Matt's like, all right, move it along.
And then he's had no issues, which has been just quite, you know, it's the story of my life. But
yeah, that is a big determinant. And we do agree that how cheaply you can fix a car will determine how long you're going to hang on to it. Because the car's only worth, you know, $2,000 or something.
You're not putting 10 into it.
Yeah, you're not putting 10 into it. Like, you know, if the alternator goes and the alternator is like $700 shipped from, you know, Munich or something, and it's like, well, I don't know. Do I want to put that money in or, you know, put something else go in the meantime? Yeah. What's the labor looking like? Whereas with anything that particularly Australian made that was sold here, the parts were just $100, you know, $150.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, it's nice and easy. Like if it's that much more expensive to upkeep, you're less likely to kind of, you know, upkeep with the car, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. Like when they put the alternator in the Typhoon, he's like, "Do you want to put it in?" He's like, "I'm like, well, yeah." And the alternator cost me just around $200, and like for a good Bosch one as well. And he's like, "All right." He comes back in about like quite literally 10 minutes. He's like, "Oh, your car's done." I'm like, "Wait, already?" Like he's like, "Dude, it's a Falcon. Like it's not hard to do." I'm like, "Okay, fair enough." There's got to be a lot to be said for cars, you know, like and simplicity. And I think that's what Toyota's just last. You know, their simplicity is really, really you know. It's keep it simple, stupid. You know, it really is with those cars, and you know, and that's why they sell so many 79 series, because they, you know, and you know, they're very simple. Like they made to last. You break them, you replace the part. Your mum can do it. It's not hard, you know. And off you go again. So, big ups to Toyota for doing that. Harley said an old old E-Class. David Prince, I know you mentioned Toyotas, but if you didn't have to mention Toyota, it's going to be a Honda of some description, I'm assuming.
Yeah, probably a manual. I reckon an EK Civic could probably do a million Ks if you looked after it.
Yep, I would agree with that.
A manual EK Civic.
Yeah.
One thing I'll just say, though, too, just thinking as we're talking, one thing that does concern me is that I think cars were built to last more in the past. I think now a lot of cars... Things that when they say the transmission sealed for life and things like that, what's the life of that they're anticipating that it's sealed for? You know, like is it 200,000 Ks? Is it 100? Is it not 500? I'm guessing.
Well, if it's anything like a BMW radiators and then all the plastics in BMWs, it's 7 years.
Yeah. Seven.
Yeah. After that, things start breaking down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Engine, cooling systems, all sorts of things. So they've done it perfectly. Planned obsolescence. You're lucky to get 10 years out of some of those BMWs.
Yeah,
but that also shows in the resale. Like, you know, a 10-year-old X5 is worth quite literally nothing. Yeah, it's you know. And because people are like, well, yeah, why would I buy that knowing that it's going to have all these issues? I mean, you had that KN, Rob. And unlucky. Oh.
I bought it with a warranty, but everything that they say can, goes wrong with them had gone wrong with it.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Drive shafts, HVAC, cooling systems, gearbox, brakes. What else went on it? There's other little bits and pieces like electronics are playing up. Mm. Just you name it, things were going wrong with it. It was in the mechanics more. In that year that I had it, then I was actually driving it.
Wow. Hey, Chad, you've just joined us. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Yes, good. Sorry to be late.
That's all right, mate.
It's on your record now, Chad.
It's okay.
All right. How many strikes in am I?
So, Chad, we're talking about if you had to buy a high miler example of a car, you know, what would you be comfortable buying and say, oh, yeah, I'd buy that? And well, I think we've pretty much determined anything Toyota is pretty good. Alan said a later Falcon's pretty good. Rob would agree. And then he also, and yeah, and Harley said, you know, older Mercs. Scotty, what did you mention again? You said Lexus. Yeah. Which is Toyota. David Prince said an EK, you know, an EK manual would be a good choice.
The only problem I have with David's suggestion is that if it's an EK and it's a manual, it's been boy raced.
Yeah, you got to be careful about which one you choose. Yeah. You want the lady CXI from Camberwell.
Or the old lady that bought the VTIR because she wanted the top of the range one and then never.
Actually, that's what I prefer. Yeah. Yeah. And, she liked the sunroof.
And never took it past 3,000 RPM. Because
never felt the VTEC.
Never felt the tech come on. And the VTEC solenoid just caked up because it's never been used. So Chad, if you had to recommend, like, well, if you were looking at a car and said, yeah, you know what, if I needed something with like a million, like let's say 300,000 Ks, what would you buy?
You guys covered pretty much all of them, I think. I want to lean towards like an older Fiat, but not an Italian built one.
Okay.
So they've got these Fiats built in Turkey.
Okay.
And these things go forever. Like, people keep fixing them. They've got spare parts, you know, still I think they make spare parts for them. And, yeah, these things are incredible. And like, they just, I mean, we don't have any here, obviously, but those cars over there, they just drive them until literally the wheels are out, or like there's no panels left. And yeah, I think apart from that, you know, Africa goes through
Mercedes.
Peugeots and Mercedes, like there's you know tomorrow. And sorry, not goes through them, they drive them.
Yeah.
Forever until again there's no, like if you guys have seen the sand job episode from what's it called,
Grand Tour,
the Grand Tour, that's right, yeah. You know, there's basically no panels left on those cars, it's just wheels and a chassis and they just keep driving them. And yeah, that's really cool. Also, this is a bit of a side note, but I ended up on this part of YouTube where it's just an African dude with a GoPro on his head who's like reviewing these cars. It's honestly fascinating because like these things are like there was like a Mazda 626, for example, right? Pretty much every part of the interior was like back to metal. The radiator didn't have a radiator cap on it. The intake it was just straight into the throttle body. It was just like so ghetto, man. It was wild. Anyway, pretty much anything that he probably reviews is what I would pick because obviously they work.
They've lived a life.
But I mean, I don't think you can go past like an AU or a BF Falcon.
Yeah.
Or even like an EL, EF.
Provided it's had the head gasket done on those series. Yeah.
That's good choices.
Yeah, absolutely. Gentlemen, I think it's time for the quiz.
All righty.
Alan,
I'm gonna move around to the side.
To the other side.
Just clip there. I apologize.
I really like the choices you guys have made today. I think those choices were quite good. And to get to our listeners, if there's any in particular that you'd be like, yeah, you know what, I agree with that. You can send it through to us on our chat. This is a Car Talk Car Quiz. 10 questions plus some bonus questions. You know how it goes. Question one: What was the first car that introduced the first steering angle four-wheel steering system? The world's first steering angle sensing four-wheel steering system. David.
Well, I've got to put in a hurrah for a third-gen Prelude four-wheel steer.
That is absolutely the correct car, Mr.
I thought you were going to say like an automobile from 1936 or something. I thought it was a trick question.
Well, I believe from my research, the 31... Skyline or R30 I think R31 in Japan, like they got them before us, obviously, with the Hiker system was first, but not the first steering angle sensing system. So that came in the on the third gen Prelude. Question two: Motor Week is a television program that has been around since what decade?
Alan. The 1990s.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
David. I want to say it's earlier than that. I want to say the 60s.
Incorrect.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I just said. That's what I wanted to say.
Okay. Scotty.
70s.
Incorrect.
Rob.
What was that?
80s.
80s is absolutely correct. 1981 is when it started. But I'm Rob.
Oh.
Bonus question. Where is this show originated from?
Alan. The UK.
Incorrect.
David. I think it's the US of A, isn't it?
Yes. It's Motor Week is produced by. So yeah, the US of A.
Imagine the road test they would have been doing in 81. That would have been awesome.
You know what's good about what's amazing about Motor Week? They do a weekly retro review where they go back to the archives and put up all these old retro reviews of like new cars. So they got like old Civics and old Hondas and all sorts of stuff. It's awesome. It's really really cool. And it's the same guy from 1981 to now. Like, it's the same guy that's doing it. He's like 150.
Really?
Yeah. But he's brilliant. I love that guy, and he's always so excited about cars. He's like, and new for 2004 is the new, you know, they've changed the he's all these little changes. He's like super excited. And I love that. I think that's really really cool. Question three: why has the new Jeep Grand Cherokee been recalled today? David got in there first.
Sorry. The wheels fall off it.
The wheels are falling off them. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's something they didn't need.
Wait, do they mean like the whole hub's coming out?
No, like the wheels are falling off. I believe, was it in regards to the studs that like the tensile or something that just
shearing,
yeah. Yeah, so. Jeep, like, we want to love you. We want to really, really like you, Jeep. Like, I think your car's...
I don't.
I think your cars are really cool, but geez, God, like make them reliable. Come on. Question four.
The wheels don't fall off.
Yes, please.
I drive it till the wheels fell off. Well, that wasn't very far, was it?
It was very far.
Yours is out of the dealership.
I think we had a guy that was it you, Rob, that told us a story that the guy, your mate bought a brand new Range Rover and drove it out of the dealership, and the motor blew up like quite literally down the road as he drove it out, and he went back and said, "Come get your car."
Yeah. He was actually the customer service rep, and he basically blew up as he drove it out.
That's the only chair on top of that would have been if they're like, "No, mate, that's user abuse.
It's user abuse.
Wear and tear."
Was that a Jeep, Rob?
No, it was a Range Rover.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't recommend Range Rovers with Ks, would that way, or Range Rovers in general, to be honest. Question four: the Aceman is a car which has been launched by which company?
Aceman is a model.
Aceman as a model. Aceman as a model. Yeah.
Chad, I'll take a stab.
Chad.
Hang on, not Geely. GWM.
Incorrect. I believe Harley had your hand up next.
Mini
is correct. The Mini Aceman. Well done.
Yeah, I suppose that's so.
Is that somewhere between the size of a countryman and a, you know, it's a countryman or a clubman?
Clubman, countryman. They've got the, what was the one with the one that looked like it had a baseball cap facing backwards? That was the Paceman.
Yeah, not the Aceman, the Paceman.
They've got what called
car. The Paceman is the.
Called the Aceman.
Electric SUV.
I think.
Yeah, Aceman.
What was the backwards cap? Was that the convertible Cooper?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird looking car. Question five. What is Mustang celebrating this year?
Rob.
60th anniversary.
Yeah,
60 years of the Ford Mustang. Well done. Score check. Rob and David are on three apiece. Rob Harley, I should say, Dominic for father's undoer. Scott, Chad, and Alan yet to score. Come on, guys.
We're working on it.
Get it into gear. Bonus question about the Mustang. What is unique and ultimately sad about the Ford Mustang?
Chad. It's the last internal combustion one.
Yeah, they haven't announced that yet, but it's the last of something. I'll give you 0.5. It's the last of something.
Oh,
David.
David.
Is it rear-wheel drive?
Yeah, incorrect.
Scott. Is it the last of them using the Coyote V8?
Incorrect. I haven't announced that yet. But it's the last something.
Hydraulic steering.
No. Incorrect. I think. Have you guessed yet, Alan?
No. Is the last to come with a V8?
No, incorrect. It is the last pony car slash muscle car for sale in the world because Camaro is gone and now the Charger is gone as well. I mean, Charger is back, but as not as a, like a muscle car. Question six: the BMW E31 8 Series was a very specialized car with engines of two cylinder choices. What were they? Or David got in there just.
That would be a V8 and a V12, wouldn't it?
V8 and V12 is correct, David Prince. Bonus question. Out of the two engines, the V12 or the V8, which sold more?
Alum. The V12.
The V12 is correct. The V12 sold a lot more, actually, in comparison. Bonus question. What was the largest V12 size they offered in litres?
Alum. 6.5 litres.
Incorrect.
Yeah. In litres.
Scott. 6.2.
Incorrect.
Oh, I have a stab. You've got to go by the badge, but then they often do things a bit out of sequence to the badge. Don't they?
They were all still called A50s, even though they were bigger than 5 litre.
Yeah. 5.5?
Incorrect.
6 litre.
Incorrect.
Rob, I'll take a stab. 4.6 litre?
That is incorrect. I think that's everybody. It's 5.6 litres. They offered a 5.6 litre CSL. CSI, actually. Question seven. The FIA is an association that represents the interests of motoring organisations. What does FIA actually stand for?
Chad. Federation of something French, but Federation International Automobile something.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. Federación Internazionale delle Automobili.
Is it French or Italian?
I think it's Italian. Like it's.
So Shed gets wrong. Yeah, he's racist. I get the point.
You got to use your hand. You got to use
your hand. I did the Italian thing probably. I was doing hand motion and I was doing the Italian accent.
Dreaming, Alan.
Some people say I look Sicilian.
where's the Godfather music playing in the background? Question eight. Which Pontiac vehicle shares its name with a Japanese car made by Mazda and rebadged as a Ford?
David. A Laser.
That is correct. Well done. Bonus question. What was the name of the car? So it was not called a Laser in this part of the world. They called it something else.
Wait.
In Japan,
the Pontiac.
It's called the Ford. Instead of Laser, it was called the name of the Pontiac. What is the name of that car?
Is it a Matrix or something?
Incorrect.
Is it Meteor?
Incorrect.
That's what I was thinking.
Can we go over the logic of this for a second? So this is a Ford car that we're after the name of, or is it a Pontiac car that we're after the name of?
So it was. It's a Ford Laser, right?
Yes.
But it was called something that Pontiac called one of their models.
Oh, I know. I know what it is. I know what it is now. Because it was the Pontiac Laser, which in America, but that wasn't the Laser.
No, that was
called the Pontiac Lynx, wasn't it, in America?
They had the Plymouth Laser, and they had the... They had a Lynx there, but that is not that is incorrect.
Wow.
That's a
tough one.
What's probably arguably the most known Pontiac of recent times?
Oh, Chad.
Chad.
Oh, hang on. No. I tap out. I was going to say something, but it's not. Definitely not.
You guys will give up? I'm getting nods. Chad, out of curiosity, what were you going to say?
I was going to say Fiero, but then I remembered it's not a front-wheel drive car.
No, incorrect. So they called the Ford Laser the Ford Aztec, as in the Pontiac Aztec, Ford Aztec.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
So the Ford Laser shares
what its name a far with... cry from a laser.
Yeah. I know. Jeez. Moving on.
The laser in America was called the Pontiac Aztec.
So no, it's.
I feel the question was worded terribly, and we should all get a point for that.
Which Pontiac vehicle shared a name with a Japanese car made by Mazda and rebadged as the Ford Laser? What was that called? It was called the Ford Aztec. Anyway, that's that. We'll skip over that one.
Shenanigans.
Next question is guess the car from the brochure. The blank sedan proves European quality. And finish doesn't need to carry an expensive price tag. Indeed, when you consider the level of performance and luxury offered by blank sedan, the alternatives look rather ordinary. Here's a genuine European car with a smooth and refined dual overhead cam, 16-valve, electronic fuel-injected 2-litre ZTEC engine that develops 97 kilowatts of power at 6,000 RPM. Scott?
Ford Mondeo.
You are absolutely correct. Jody. I had well that. Done. I
had that. Done. Good.
Remember you said ZTEC?
ZTEC, yeah.
Damn you, Scotty.
ZTEC gave it away. Well done.
ZTEC gave it away, but also I remember the talk. I remember the ads and everything about it being European quality and everything for that one day.
Well done. Very, very, very good. Next one is the last one of. Oh, it's question 10. It's another brochure question. The blank marks the beginning of a new era. Unlike previous seven-seaters on the market, the blank offers much style as it does space. We are offering the new standard of driver enjoyment and sophistication. The blank is a combination of this and much more. The impressive automotive technology is available with two different models, the blank and the blank luxury. Both models have a range of standard features like the comfort sophistication, which take comfort sophistication to new levels. The blank and the blank luxury boast stylish wood grain paneling, look paneling, climate control air conditioning, power windows, and even the added convenience of 8 separate cup holders.
David. Are we talking the Honda Odyssey?
We are talking the Honda Odyssey.
Why do I not say anything? I was thinking it.
Were you thinking, you were thinking
eight cup holders.
The only reason I didn't say it is because I thought if it is a Honda Odyssey, David will know it. David would have already said it. That's literally what held me back.
Yeah, I was leaning towards a Tarago, but then there's no luxury badge on the Tarago. And I was going to say, yeah, it would have been.
There you go. So
I had Kia Carnival stuck in my head. And I'm like, Kia Carnival, get it out of my head. But it was stuck there.
A luxury.
Wasn't there a Chrysler sort of that sort as well?
Yeah, Grand Voyager.
Grand Voyager. Yeah, sure.
I know people that still have a Grand Voyager that they've got new.
Wow.
That's amazing. That it's
do with the plaquey hubcaps on it and everything. It's. I sort of looked at it only a couple of weeks ago and thought, you know, that's now so daggy, it's sort of cool. It's sort of, it's
done a full circle.
It has.
Is it a first-gen Voyager or the update?
Yeah, second? First-gen.
You know what? I went to school with a girl whose whole family came in that Voyager. It was a white Voyager with black bumpers. It was a miserable vehicle. But... Oh, geez, it was dreary, but the it was reliable. Like they never had an issue with it. So, that if there was something that Chrysler did quite well, it was the Voyager. So they did sell them quite well.
One of their family members has worked for Mercedes-Benz for many, many years, and of course they could buy them through Daimler Chrysler. So that's why they got one. They had twins unexpectedly. After another two kids, so they ended up with four kids and mum and dad sort of thing. So they needed a multiple seater, and it was just that's what you could get sort of through the fleet thing. And they've had it all this time.
Well, there you go. I was going to say, firstly, I feel really bad for them, but secondly, fair effort. And it's a Voyager is kind of cool now. So I'll agree with you on that. Score check. Alan, Scotty on 1, Chad on 1.5, Rob on and Harley on 3, and tonight's winner on a grand total of 6 is Mr. David Prince. Well done.
Thank you, boys.
Just a quick note, the WRX is at
340,000 Ks on the Rex.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wait, on your STI?
No.
The WRX I had before this STI.
Oh, wow.
2003. I bought it at 212. Moved it along at, I think, 260-something.
Mm-hmm.
And then my brother-in-law's, yeah, had it, and it's 340.
That's awesome.
That's pretty good. That's really good for a Rex, isn't that it? Is
impressive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I see what you did there, Chad. Impressive.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Shania Twain would be proud.
Anything major gone wrong with that? Sorry, Alan, with the WRX?
No. Like, I did have a major bill where basically...
You did everything.
Yeah, so when we had the engine out to do the rocker cover gaskets and the cam seals, I did the clutch as well.
Okay.
And the, what do you call it, timing belt and stuff. So that was like the one major bill I had personally. But, yeah, there was nothing like catastrophically wrong with the engine itself.
It went really well, that car. Yeah. I liked driving that one. That was fun.
It was a blob eye, was it?
Yep, the best kind.
You know, blob eye STIs are worth more than Hawkeye STIs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's crazy. Anyway, moving on. Before we depress ourselves anymore.
I just wish I was one of those people that could, you know, make be happy with the bug eye and be like, nobody else is interested, I'll get a cheap one.
But see, I think the bug eye's coming to its own now. I think I actually quite like a bug eye.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you want probably the cheapest STI, you're looking at the what's the gen after the Hawkeye? GBs?
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, those are usually the cheapest right now.
The one that came in a hatch in a sedan.
Mm.
Looking car.
The blob eye and a bug eye. I'm partial to one of those. I don't mind those. Yeah. I had a guy try to sell me his Hawkeye wagon WRX. Really low key, like really nice example. And he's like, Matt, I just need a Gorn. He's like, everyone who comes look at it says, ask me, it's 2.5. He's like, yes. He's like, is the head gasket gone? No. So he's like, I can't sell the damn thing. He's like, just buy it. I'm like, no, I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't want any more cars. But anyway.
Man's like, we've already had a head gasket in our family.
So what was that, Chad?
Was this before or after you had your Subaru?
Oh, no. This is like a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, right. Well.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you seem to take good care of it. And then he's like, oh, I like it. They got someone that takes care of it. I'm like, mate, his name's Liam. I'm like, Liam, I'm not buying your car. Like,
that's a hard sell.
Yeah, so he's like, but why not? And I had to say, oh, it's because it's a black car. I said, I'd never buy a black car again after owning one. I was like, no, I'm never buying a black car again because they look beautiful when they're clean. And 2 seconds later, they are dirty as hell. I'm never buying a black car again.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, gentlemen, I think that's a podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Yep, yep, yep.
501.
501. Yeah. 500.
What about high mileage?
Oh man, 500,000 Ks on the old girl. That's a. Anyway, Rob's firefighting. I've started doing your designs. So I'll send them through to you so you can approve before I put them up on our site. Electricals. What else do you do? Apocalypse. Stuff.
Firefighting.
Yep. Easy guy. Harley site managing will always be there with that. Chad's deliveries. Chad, you're delivering to an area near you sometime soon.
That's it. Yeah.
Get the orders in. David Prince, you do a podcast?
Yes, I do sometimes. Auto Retro. It's called the podcast where we talk to people about their cars of their lives.
Absolutely. Good listening. Scotty's snitches, nothing to snitch on anymore, but Scotty's golf tip of the week.
Oh, yeah, I've got one. All about hitting the wood off the deck.
I don't know what that means. The wood off the
deck. Perfect. I'm sure everyone does. Come on. Golf terms. We're there by now. Is it?
I'm still learning to grip the shaft, Scotty. And clean the balls. Yeah, I'm still learning.
I've got bare hands.
Yeah.
I'll come around and help.
Whoa.
That took a turn. Anyway, so hitting the
back to wood.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
A lot of people have trouble hitting their higher irons off the fairway and things like that. You really get out there and practice hitting your wood off the fairways when you're in that further distance, because even if you do a fairly bad shot with it, it's still got quite a bit of force behind it, because there's a fair bit of weight in that behind it, bigger head on it compared to your irons. You're still going to get quite a bit of distance as opposed to you stuffing up an iron shot, not going to roll as far. So just practice doing some of those fairway driver, fairway wood hits, and see how you go. Because even if you mess up, you're still going to travel at least 150 meters or more, because it's just going to skim and roll for ages. But hey, you never know. You might get used to it and start smacking them, hitting them even further. Get on it.
There you go. You heard it here first. Alum, our friend, Rizzy Ross.
If you are interested in the electric car space, you can hit up our friend Rizzy Ross at carloop.com.au, also available on Facebook. Search up facebook.com/carloopau. He's driven a lot of the electric cars that are available in the Australian market, and he also knows what new cars go for. So if you're in the market for a new car or an electric car, hit him up.
Chad also, just before we go on, so Chad's found the car he was talking about. Was it called the Tofaş Şahin?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Turkish version based on the
1.3.1, yeah.
Wow.
There you go. From 19...
And they made a sedan and a station wagon. And then there was an older one. I think it was based on I don't really know much about. Or it's like round eye, had like round eyes on the front and then square lights in the rear. Like it was a weird one. Mm-hmm. And then they had 2 doors and 4 doors as well. Whole like world of cars that, you know, we never got, and yeah, really cool.
Fun fact, okay, so the early one's the one that's based on the 131. The later one is based on the Fiat Regatta.
There you go.
Which we got here.
Regatta.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And the factory in Turkey was used in the Michael Keaton movie Working Class Man.
And
if you've ever seen that, because that was based around him going and managing a car production company. And he was the sort of the boss of this car. And it took me ages to work out, hang on, that's a Fiat production line. They look like Fiats, but it's not in Italy, you know. And yeah, it turned out to be in Turkey.
It's probably where Rob's Ford Transit came out of now, because that's, you know, the Turkey production plant.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe.
Like and share our Facebook page. It's Car Talk TRQ. Matty J, if you miss any of our episodes, they're all up on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasting out. So never forget to subscribe, rate, and review to us there. Check out our merch. Go to Teespring Store. Go to teespring.com. New merch on the way. Or become a patron to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Car Talk Podcast and support the show there. We are also on
YouTube. Our 500th episode will hopefully be up on there with the video content of everyone's faces except for who got missed out. Ossifer Felk and Adrian got slightly chopped out, but apart from that, you can see everyone's lovely faces. So look forward to that. Give us a subscription, and we'll hopefully entertain you in the future.
Absolutely.
Allegedly.
Gentlemen, honor as always, and we'll see you next time. Take it easy.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
See you.